With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Hey, welcome to Blue Wire. After you finish listening to this awesome Blue Wire podcast, make sure you check out the other pods in our Blue Wire family. Okay, I know, you're probably wondering, how do I do that? Well, it's simple. Go to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and search Blue Wire. Ta-da! They will all be there, so have fun listening.
All right, what's going on, everyone? This is episode 97 of BuzzBeat. I am Richie, and we'll be joined, as always, by Brian and Spencer. Just a reminder, BuzzBeat is a proud member of the Blue Wire Network. You can find our episodes on BlueWirePods.com, Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher. We truly appreciate if you guys can give us our podcast a rating and review on iTunes. On this episode, we're going to be rehashing if Kemba will make the All-NBA team and the implication that has on his salary. And then to wrap the episode, we're going to talk about some players that are actually performing in the NCAA tournament, and those are some prospects that could potentially fall to Charlotte as well. So, first off, guys, how are your brackets going?
Terrible. I don't have any Final Four teams correct. So I didn't pick Virginia to make Final Four. So yeah, no, awful.
Really?
It's been a long year. Yeah, I thought Tennessee was the best team in that region.
So did I.
Yeah, Tennessee was really good. The whole Rick Barnes factor is something you just can't account for. You know what I mean? It rears its head every March. But I actually liked Virginia coming out of that region. I've thought Virginia, even though they didn't play very well in Charlotte in the ACC tournament, I just thought they were one of the four or five best teams, if not one of the top teams in the country the whole year. I mean, some of these games have been a little tight, but I don't know. Like the March Madness is just so random.
Yep.
Like it's unbelievable. These one game samples, like what can swing, and you know, it goes beyond just, you know, is your bracket busted or not. This is what we hold some players and coaches. We make like their reputation accountable for this kind of stuff. Like it's a little insane.
Yeah,
Tony Bennett is no different of a coach now than he was a year ago. He just now is a Final Four, so that solidifies what he's worked for 50 years. I don't know. It's a little weird to me, but I guess that sports sort of in a nutshell. We are results-based, and we don't really care too much about context, and therefore the NCAA tournament is sort of the perfect beast for that.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that I enjoy the NCAA tournament a whole lot more when I don't fill out a bracket. Like you, Spencer, all four of my Final Four teams got knocked out this weekend, and you know, I'm still going to enjoy the basketball, but now that my bracket is completely busted, that's the reason why. So I feel like moving forward, I'm going to stop filling out brackets and going into pools. I feel like I've only won it one time. And like you said, Brian, so random. Anyone could win a bracket pool. You really don't have to know much about basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a crazy NCAA tournament. But what a good Elite Eight. What a solid,
awesome,
close,
yep,
every single game coming down really to the last few
awesome
possessions.
Yep.
Even the Gonzaga-Texas Tech game. And Virginia, it's been a very weird tournament for them. They've gotten solid play from all their key players, but not consistent play. You would have told me that before the tournament started. I would have told you they're going to get knocked off before Minneapolis. But this team just has a different edge than past Virginia teams. They've played a little differently this year. I think that has benefited them late in the season. That game the other night was, I mean, I, along with the team and the rest of the fan base, died and somehow came back to life. And now they're in the Final Four, so it's good stuff, though.
Ty Jerome has really raised his game. He's been, I mean, the guy's been awesome all season. I mean, he was great last season. He's been amazing this year. He should have been first team All-ACC. And he's like a legitimate first round draft prospect. But like dude, he was so good against Oregon, and he was so good against Purdue that even though DeAndre Hunter's offense has been like hit or he has not been efficient in this tournament, and Guy has struggled a ton. Like Jerome has just driven the offense, man. He's been incredible.
So yeah, so real quick, and then we'll talk about the things that you guys actually tuned in to listen about. Jerome is a no-show in the ACC tournament. Mm-hmm. The NCAA tournament starts and Jerome's back. Then Kyle Guy's a no-show through the first two and a half games of the NCAA tournament. And then in this Elite Eight game, Jerome and Guy collectively, just unbelievable how well those two played. And DeAndre Hunter, now he's lost. So you kind of feel like this thing's going to come full circle for Virginia. And if they can get all three of those guys involved consistently, certainly on the offensive end, you know they're going to be plugged in defensively. Kind of does feel like Virginia's the team to beat from here. And I'll regret saying that, but it does feel that way.
You just jinxed it, Spencer. Auburn by 10. All right, let's get into the Hornets talk. Like Spencer said, this is what you're here for. And it is a little bit on the depressing note. I think, not mathematically, but the Hornets with this 35-41 record, they are pretty much, the nail in the coffin. They're out of the playoff picture at this point. And I think that, the Lakers game really did them in. But if you wanted to add another nail in the coffin, that would have been last night against Golden State. We're recording this on a Monday night, so we're actually not going to be able to recap any of the Utah game, but it's probably going to be more of the same. But we wanted to rehash the All-NBA talk because this does have big implications coming this summer. I know that we talked about this last episode with Christian Winfield and his kind of take on that, and he felt that Kemba would make the All-NBA team. And with Kemba making the All-NBA team, he does qualify for the designated veteran player extension, or as people call it, the Supermax. So, well, first off, because, the Hornets can offer one more year than any other teams because he is with Charlotte. We are the team that he is currently with. So in free agency, the most anyone can offer him is 4 years. But having said that, if he does qualify for the All-NBA team, he makes either the first, the second, or the third team. Not only will Hornets be able to offer him 5 years, the actual salary, which, gets like, I think, 8% raises, gets up to $221 million over the course of 5 years. So big implications for this, whether or not Kemba's going to make it. I do think it's borderline, and we discussed this a little bit. So I think we should first talk about briefly who we think is going to make the All-NBA team. And I will start, again, this is just the guards. And we mentioned these two names kind of as shoe-ins for first team, and I'm not going to spend too much time on these two names, but Curry and Harden, to me, first team guards, not going to go into too much about them. I think second team to me, Dame and Kyrie as my second team guards. Dame, scoring on all three levels on the court. His efficiency numbers are really great. His assist numbers are up there as well. And then as much as I don't like Kyrie as a player that I would want on my team, he is still producing. And so that kind of wraps up the first four guards. So now it's open for the last two guard spots in the third team. And to me, it's down to Westbrook, Beal, Kemba, and Ben Simmons in my eyes. I do think that Westbrook is going to get it. I think this will be his third straight season of averaging a triple-double. Clearly, his efficiency numbers are never really there, but he affects the game in so many ways that I think, just kind of that effect on a game will get him the nod for third team. So, and then having said that, I do think Kemba gets that last spot with Westbrook on the third team. But I would not be surprised to see Beal get it or Ben Simmons get it. Simmons is very similar to Westbrook in the sense that he's averaging almost a triple-double as well, and he affects the game in many ways, not with his shooting by any chance, but he can get to the basket and score at the rim at will. So what are your first, second, and third team guards, Brian?
All right. You and I think alike here, Richie. I think obviously the first team, no-brainers with Harden and Steph. I mean, Harden has been the best or second best player in basketball this year, period. And Steph has been amazing, and if he had played a little bit more, he'd be in the MVP conversation too. He certainly deserves some third, fourth, or fifth place consideration in the MVP voting. Dame has been amazing in Portland, just amazing. And it really sucks. The Nurkic injury sucks for a lot of reasons. In fact, because it just like totally weakens the Blazers as like a as a playoff threat. I mean, they basically lose Dyat Jokic and the guy who was who'd become their second best player in Nurkic. And that really sucks. I got Kyrie as my fourth guy. I just think what Kyrie's done is sort of he's caused lots of problems with this team, right? And he can't stop talking and saying weird or off the wall stuff. But like, dude's averaging 24-7-5. And is really, really close with high usage, very close to going 50, 40, and 90. Like 49% from the field, 39.8 on three, and 87% from the line. He doesn't get to the line that much either, too. But I mean, all things considered, 3.7 attempts per game. I've heard some people, I've even heard some smart NBA types like Ryan Russillo, I think on Lowe's podcast said he didn't have Kyrie on. I think Kyrie's got to be a lock for one of these six spots, to be totally honest with you. Whether you put him four, five, or six, I think he's got to be on there. My last two spots, like those are the wild card spots for me. I think Brad Beal should get one of those last two spots at fifth or sixth, and that leaves Russell Westbrook, Kemba, Ben Simmons, and then if you want to throw Klay Thompson and Mike Conley into the mix too, fine. I think those guys are like a tier below these other dudes. You know, this is one of those things where it's interesting because the way these things are decided, it's a bit of a popularity contest, and certainly Westbrook is while polarizing is a better known player, and like Russ is having a hilariously inefficient season. 29% on threes, 48% on twos, 66% from the line, 50% true shooting. Like, these are bad numbers, man. Really bad. Historically bad in some contexts. But I still think Westbrook might get it's just tough. Like, I think it's between Kemba and Russ for that last spot. I think Kemba's clearly had a better season. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Russ get that spot. I could also see Kemba getting in over Beal. But, yeah, Kemba would be my sixth guard. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Westbrook get that sixth spot too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much where you guys are, slightly different. I mean, obviously, you know, the first two guards are, you know, the first team are obvious. You know, I think that it gets interesting after Dame. I have Westbrook on second team ahead of Kyrie. I do, you know, tend to agree with the skeptics out there that look, if we don't know exactly how we're voting and what we're looking at when we're voting and what really goes into this pie, then I think you have to, in the age of the NBA, when everything's so public and everything's on social media and everything's accessible from these guys, then if they act like jackasses, then I do think you hold it against them. My personal opinion, mm-hmm. But I think you do. And so, you know, I don't put Kyrie on that second team, number one, because of that. Number two, because statistically, outside of Westbrook's shooting numbers, he's actually having a much more impactful season from a statistical standpoint to me than Kyrie is. I mean, he's still impacting the game in a double-digit way in three categories. That's amazing. That's phenomenal. We already saw him do it for a season, but he's quietly doing it again. His shooting's actually been better here recently, even though the Thunder are just a total mess right now. I got Westbrook on that second team over Kyrie. I still have Kyrie on third team. I mean, you can't completely ignore the numbers. I think he does deserve that. And you know what? I think it gets really interesting between Bradley Beal and Kemba Walker. I think in a vacuum, Kemba Walker's had the better season, but Brad Beal's had a damn good season too. And I just can't get a feel for how much Kemba Walker playing for the Charlotte Hornets is actually going to affect him in this voting process. I know that sounds like very old school and draconian, but I actually think that this could affect Walker in a negative way. And I just wouldn't be surprised to see him left out, even behind a guy like Bradley Beal. So, you know, I know the Wizards aren't any better, right? But he plays in a bigger market. He's been without his best player this year, and really his numbers in a lot of ways have improved. Having the best season of his career, arguably. Look, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for the Hornets to have Kimball left off this, and I'm starting to feel like it could end up playing out that way. You know, you can't just vote on a whim. I mean, this means millions and millions and millions of dollars for players, and it matters for fans, and it matters for team salary cap. So this is a big decision for the people that do have a vote in the NBA.
I think if this vote obviously took place in December or January, I think Kemba would be a shoo-in. I think his numbers have fallen off a little bit. He's had, like you said, had some good games here and there sprinkled throughout recently. But overall, I feel like his numbers have kind of declined a little bit since the new year. And that could be, you know, what it takes. You know, the lasting memory, the last thing that you remember of Kemba, you know, his numbers have been on decline since the new year. And maybe that does leave him off that third team. What do you think about that, Brian, in terms of just kind of him declining throughout the season?
Yeah, I mean, he has not been – he obviously got off to an incredible start. It was unsustainable. And, you know, there's been – there's a lot of responsibility put on him, and teams have – ganged up on him and done whatever they could do to make life difficult and get the ball out of his hands. And I mean, we've talked about this literally every week the entire season. And then as some people have discussed too, like maybe he's had some health issues, but yeah, he's not the guy plays a style of basketball that's, unless you're Curry, is really hard to do. I mean, really he and Lillard and Curry and I mean Harden sort of playing his own sport too, but like they're really these handful of guys that play this one style of ball, and it can be really tough if teams can roll a little bit more of their coverages. Like you got to take that shot with one more arm in your face or a step further from beyond the line. And yes, I think ultimately, as his performance has, while still been very good all season, has been just not, he has not been the type of like high volume pull up 3-point shooter that a guy like Dame Lillard is, basically. He just hasn't, he has not been that. One other name we should have also mentioned with all this too, Jrue Holiday probably deserves a little bit of recognition too. A guy's pulled up RPM numbers for NBA point guards this season. Harden 1, Curry 2, Lillard 3, Holiday 4, Kyrie 5, Kyle Lowry 6, Chris Paul 7, Conley 8. Eric Bledsoe 9, Westbrook is 11, Kemba Walker is 12.
Where's so Russell? Some of the names. Where's D'Angelo Russell?
D'Angelo Russell is 19th on his defense. Defense weighs him down a little bit there.
Yeah,
and that's a whole for another day. When the three of us have more time in the summer, I'll maybe when we're talking free agency stuff and D'Angelo Russell gets his new contract, I can go into more or less why I'm not a big Russell fan. But but anyways. Those are the guys, and I threw out Chris Paul's name there too. Like it, I said this on last episode with Christian too. But it is interesting to see how injuries have played a role in this year as well. Like John Wall missing the whole season, Oladipo missing a ton of time, Chris Paul missing like just enough time. This happens every year with Chris Paul, where like he misses just enough games that you can't consider him for All-Star and All-NBA and all this sorts of stuff too. So, you know, it would be really fascinating to see if Victor Oladipo having a crappy injury in December or whatever, like, does that come back to help Kemba get on the third team? It's fascinating the way these things are interconnected. I don't know if it's absolutely a good thing either too, because now that could lead it. The three of us should be dying to get Kemba on one of these All-NBA rosters, and instead we're looking at it with like a little bit of – it's like it just stinks that you're at a place where you're thinking, wow, would it be a good thing for him to get on All-NBA? Like it would be the highlight of this guy's career, and we're like uncertain if it's a good thing for the franchise or not. Well, that kind of sucks.
Let's transition to that, you know, briefly. Like, would it be in the best interest for Charlotte to even offer him the Supermax? And if he doesn't qualify for the Supermax, would it even be in the best interest for the Hornets to offer him the regular max, which would be, you know, $189 million over 5 years, which averages, you know, anywhere from $30 to $40 million per year, which to me, while he may deserve it, he was underpaid, you know, tremendously in his previous contract. I just don't think it's in the best interest for Charlotte to do that. I'm not sure how much success this team is going to have over the next couple of seasons. The team next year is basically going to be the same team that we have this year, just with rookies that have one more year under their belt. And then by the time some of these bigger contracts fall off, and then Batum is even on for another summer compared to some of these other players, you also wonder, you know, with Kemba aging, with all the wear and tear he's had on his body, having to carry this team, I think there's going to be a noticeable decline. And I just say yes, you know, this is probably not the best thing to do for Charlotte, is to offer him the max. And I know that's probably might push him away, and you could probably say, hey, goodbye to Kemba if you don't even offer him anywhere near the max. But it is a tricky situation because we can offer him the most money, the most years, but really, is that in the best interest for Charlotte?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think it is. Not even the regular max.
Like, right.
I wouldn't be upset if you know, Kemba didn't make All-NBA and the Hornets offered him the full max and he accepted and he stayed in Charlotte. Like, that's a victory, you know, obviously. But, you know, I just think that the only way this organization is going to be able to see more clearly is by, you know, ripping the Band-Aid off. And the only, you know, the only way that's going to happen right now is Kemba walking this summer. And the franchise realizing that they really just have to ride out the Batum contract, try to develop the young guys here in the next few seasons, and then really set themselves up for 2021, you know, to start really seriously digging in and rebuilding this roster. And in the meanwhile, you know, Kemba leaving next year, I mean, Charlotte would be one of the worst teams in the NBA. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get a good draft pick that next summer. I mean, you know, that's just where we are. There's no creative way to do this and build a winning roster if you re-sign Kemba for 35% or more of the salary cap. There's just no way to do it. There's zero way. Nobody is taking Nick Batum without also completely, you know, taking anything off your roster or future assets that are super valuable. And Charlotte doesn't have those either. So I really, truly believe, and it's not even a blessing in disguise anymore, right? Like, I think for the smart people, it's becoming obvious that if Kemba leaves, it's okay to just be like, dude, that guy was so good, and I appreciate that time we had with right. him and what he did for this franchise, but it's time for these two parties to go in there. It's okay to just admit that.
It's okay. And we've said this on this podcast before. It would at least give a clear cut, okay, here's what you got to do. You know, it would be, in a way, I'm not saying it's win-win, but at least with Kemba, it'd be like, okay, man, you go get your money and go figure out the best team to play for you. I want to see you play in a conference final. You know what I mean? I think every Hornets fan that's at least semi-reasonable would feel that way. And for the Hornets, it would say, well, now you know what you got to do. Like, yeah, you probably – maybe you should have traded this guy. You probably should have traded him at the deadline in 2018. But guess what? Like, he walked – and we've seen this. Like, the Hawks let Horford walk in 2016, and they let Millsap walk in 2017. Like, it's not completely without precedent. And the whole, like, oh, would Kemba signing the Supermax be a good or a bad thing? It's not even, like, specific to just the Hornets and Kemba. Like, this is kind of a league-wide thing, a league-wide issue at the moment. Like, and you look around, like, these other ones that have been signed, like the John Wall one in Washington, like, that's a disaster. That's an albatross. The Westbrook one, like, it's not looking so – I mean, like, it's okay right now, but it's not looking great, right? You know, his play has really declined this year, and they owe him a ton of money. And that 5-year max started this season with Russell. And hell, if Paul George hadn't re-signed there, that thing would be looking really bloody this year too. Yes, the Harden and Curry ones have so far they look good, but like that's not a problem. This isn't even a problem that's specific to just the Hornets and Kemba. Like this is a league-wide issue that touches on a lot of limbs outside of the 704 area code. But yeah, no, like it would ultimately, at this point, you know, I don't even know what the best course of strategy is, because they really should rebuild, but like you've made that path as muddy as you possibly could, and you sort of tied yourself to Kemba now, and it would be tough for them to just straight up say, thanks, but you know, we gotta do what's right for us, and you need to do what's right for yourself, and we gotta part ways here, because the one advantage Charlotte has is that they can offer him way more money, way more years, whether that matters a ton to him or not. But they can do that. But is it long term? It's not good for the sustainability of the roster. But
like you mentioned, it's tough. They kind of already said, hey, we're sticking with Kemba. If they were going for the rebuild, they should have made that decision 2 seasons ago. So by letting him walk in the offseason, it's almost like they're admitting what they did was the incorrect decision, but it still could be the smarter of the two.
Yeah, and it makes, like, if Kemba decides that he does want to come back and they really start talking seriously, you know, when free agency opens, this deal has to be a 5-year deal, right? Like, we've seen creative deals throughout the league. I always go back to the Kyle Lowry one, you know, when the Raptors were trying to go in two directions at once. That's what smart franchises do. They gave him a 3-year deal, if I'm not wrong.
No, and 100 over 3.
So he's, you know, he's making nice change. And they're not tied. Neither side's tied down with each other for a long time. More important for Toronto. But the point here is that with Batum on the books for two more years, there's no way that Kimball would sign anything less than a 5-year deal, because he's not going to play in Charlotte for the next contract he signs, if it gets signed, for 50% of the time that guy, Nick Batum, is eating up about 30% of the salary cap. There's no way he would do that. There's no way. That is about as irresponsible as the Charlotte Hornets have conducted business in the past 4 or 5 seasons. So I don't see that happening. So basically, because he's going to look at the situation, he's going to say, they're not going to be able to trade him. He's here for 2 more years. I got to sign a 5-year contract, right? Because I got to give myself 3 years to realistically win on a high level here in Charlotte. But that has got to be a mutual agreement between the two sides if this thing's going to happen. And I just, when push comes to shove, I've kind of gone off in another direction here, but when push comes to shove, I don't think Kimba's going to be able to say yes to that. You're not throwing away 2 years of your prime, I guess, if you look at it like that. But I think that if you really dig deep and crunch all the numbers and look at all the different scenarios and ways this thing could play out, you throw it through the grinder 100 times during the next 2 seasons with Nick Batum, and you're like, wait a minute, there's really no way we can win more than 45 games in those 2 seasons. So then I'm 32 years old, and that's when we're supposed to start winning? Like, I just don't really see how this works out for Kevin and Charlotte. It's just hard to imagine that he's going to resign here.
Okay, on the other side of the break, we're going to be talking about college prospects, but let's first talk about an offer that Blue Wire has. We're teaming up with Harry's Razors to make sure that you guys are shaving comfortably. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set. This set includes a 5-blade razor, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. You get all that for just $3 shipped right to your door. Enough with the cheap razors, it's totally worth trying Harry's. I've tried it and loved it. My wife tried it and loved it. I know that Spencer uses it. Now we just need to get Brian and you guys on Harry's as well. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. The founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and over-designed. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for $3. All right, let's move on to some college prospect talk. I'm going to hand the keys over to Spencer as he's going to profile one of his favorite prospects in this upcoming draft. So, Spencer, take it away with the player that we have not talked about yet.
Yeah, Rui Hachimura. Did you hear that, Richie? I said that correctly, I think. I don't know if I've ever been able to say a player not born in the United States. I've never been able to say his name correctly, so that's impressive on my part. Now, Hachimura, I do like him as a prospect. You know, I'm not in love with him, but I think that most people are too low. 6'8", 230-pound power forward. He's a junior at Gonzaga. The biggest negative here is Rui's going to be almost 22 years old when he first plays in the NBA. So that's a huge negative. I've stated before that I don't put as much stock into that as maybe some others, because I think some of these younger guys you draft get to the end of their rookie scale contract and then start playing well, and you're like, crap, so what are we extending for? I think it's actually better in some cases when you get a guy who's a little older. Look, Rui is a fluid. He's a very strong, powerful player. That's how I would describe him, first and foremost. 6'8", so he's got, a wing body, if you will, and that's probably one of the biggest concerns with him just on the court is, what position is he going to play in the NBA? Probably has to play power forward, but if he's going to reach his ceiling, he needs to have those wing skill. He needs to have that wing skill set, and I don't really think he's that far away. He's not a nuclear He's not a nuclear jump out of the gym kind of athlete, but he's a fluid athlete. He moves with long strides. He's a killer in transition. He can grab and go. We saw that a lot in the Elite Eight against Texas Tech on Saturday. I thought he had a good game. He was good from the foul line this season. He's really good in the mid-range. The shot looks okay mechanically to me. He attempted 36 three-pointers this year, which was a career high for him at Gonzaga. Obviously, played a lot of minutes this year, but was 40. He's 15 to 36 for the season, 41%, a little over that. Very small sample, but I think that has a chance to translate. I really do. He looks like a guy to me who can, with a higher volume of opportunities, is going to be an okay shooter. You know, I would say he's kind of like an OG Anunoby type of athlete. You know, one of the Morris twins, you know, Marcus Morris, maybe he gets there to be a player like that. And I think that that's a fine late lottery kind of selection in this draft. Probably my favorite thing about Rui, though, is his ability to be a slasher, to attack the rim on straight line drives and finish with his right and left hand. He's pretty, he's underrated with his craftiness around the basket. Gonzaga used him with his back to the basket a lot. I mean, they just tried to bully everybody they played with Hachimura and Brandon Clark. And why wouldn't they, right? So it's that, how he was used at Gonzaga. And when I watch him play in transition, I almost see two different things. I see a guy that we're going to watch him play in the NBA and be like, wait a minute, I did not see that at Gonzaga. Right, because he was playing in the West Coast Conference against much, much, much smaller opponents. And they wanted to bully everybody. I actually think there's some wing skill set in this guy, and I think he can really develop into a small four, power four combo in the NBA and guard definitely two positions, probably three positions. I'm just a little bit confused as to why Hachimura is being considered at this point, I think, is a mid-first-round pick. I mean, the Stephian, which I think is probably the best draft coverage out there if you really want to dig in deep on this stuff, doesn't even have him ranked in the top 30 of their prospects. I think that's a mistake. I just think he's a good enough athlete and a powerful enough player that he's going to translate physically to the NBA right away. And I always look at that to be a positive.
Yeah, I think having him outside of the top, I've seen some of the, like, you know, this guy's not a real prospect talk. I don't buy that totally either. I think he's like a top 20 prospect. I think he's pretty safely in that range for me. Super productive college player, right? With legitimate skills, good frame, wingspan, 7 foot, 7 foot, 7 feet, 1.5 inches. Mm-hmm. Like you said, he's coordinated, man. He runs fluid. I don't think his vision is great, and he's not much of a passer. Played over 11,000 minutes this, or pardon me, 1,100 minutes this year, just 57 assists. But like you said, he runs well. He's a good defensive rebounder, 17% defensive rebound rate. And like you said, he shot pretty well at the rim. He's not an explosive athlete, but 63% at the rim in the half court, that's pretty good. 54% on post-ups. We talked about this a little bit with Bridges last year. It's like, I like those combo forwards that have post-up skills because that's the way you can counter switches and getting smaller guys matched up on you in the NBA. I think the biggest weakness with him, and I'll say this too, the age with Hachimura doesn't bother me that much, except if you're trying to sit, I think, like, if you're looking at this guy as like a late bloomer, then the age works a little bit against him. Do you know what I mean? A little bit against him. But the biggest concern for me, I'm not worried about the age with him. That doesn't bother me. It's the defense. Like, not only does this guy have low stocks numbers, just 1.3 steals and one block per 40 minutes. That, along with a low offensive rebound number, only 5.8% offensive rebound rate. Like, it just, how explosive, how impactful can he be at all times? And then just, you see him go, you got to pull up some tape of him as the four guarding pick and roll and guarding ball screens. And yeah, it's just his position. Yeah. And so that's why. Yes, I love the Morrison comparisons. Sometimes I worry he's a little more Jabari Parker, though. Do you know what I mean? Just in terms of, like, how he's thinking and processing defensively, like, it's a problem, I think, with him defensively on the court. But his shooting numbers are great. I mean, he shot 72% overall at the rim. Like I said, 63% in the half court. And, you know, 60% of those were assisted on. So 40% of those he either got, you know, on offense rebounds or he created the shot in transition. Like you said, he is a beast in transition. He put up good transition numbers, 1.3 points per possession, according to Synergy in transition. The one other thing I'd say on him, though, too, that's a little bit of a knock. He struggled against top 50 competition in 10 games versus top 50 teams this year. Offensive rating was down, effective shooting down, offensive rebound down, three-point percentage down, two-point percentage down, and turnovers up. So, like, he struggled. When Gonzaga played better teams, I mean, like you said, he had a good game against Texas Tech. But overall, when Gonzaga played better teams this year, he had his own issues. But, like, I'm with you. Like, I think he's a solid prospect. I like combo forwards that can shoot and score from a couple different levels. I know most of his stuff was in the mid-range or at the rim or whatever. But, you know, I think there's a three-point shot you could build on there. Yeah, I'm certainly curious by it. And yeah, like I good motor, runs well, he's fluid, good wingspan. I'm not like anti Hachimura. I'm not crazy about him in the lottery unless it's like late in the lottery, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think he's a little safer from like 15 to 20 than he is from like say 10 to 14. But that's where I'm at with Hachimura. I like him. I think the defensive thing it's a problem as a prospect when you're not at least elite in one of those two things. But if your offense is, we think it's pretty good, but your defense is like already going to lower your ceiling as a prospect, then I get like a little concerned.
Yeah, I agree with you that the defense is certainly the most concerning aspect of his game. I watch him move just as an athlete generally, and I'm not ready to give up there. You know, I don't – like the Jabari Parker thing's interesting. I don't – Jabari Parker didn't have a high motor at all, ever, on the defensive end. I mean, it just looked like he didn't care, right? And a lot of that could be he's not processing information quickly, and I'm sure that's an issue with Hachimura too. But Hachimura appears to me to be a very consistent competitor and pretty hard-nosed kid. I just would be more willing to bet on that kind of player before a guy like Jabari, but that's interesting. I don't know. Hachimura, I think there's a lot here to be unlocked. If the Hornets pick 13th, 12th, somewhere in that range, I wouldn't be pissed if they took this guy. I think that him and Miles could actually be a pretty fun fit, especially defensively, if you're able to dig in and get something out of Rui. Just kind of like close your eyes. Picture Bacon, Miles, Rui. It might get sliced up when they're all young, but that's kind of intriguing, right? Like there's some length mm-hmm. and some switchiness and some athleticism. Definitely some athleticism in that trio. So I just don't hate the fit here with the Hornets, and I like him as an athlete. It's just like you said, Brian, he's older. How quickly mm-hmm. can he figure this stuff out? I don't think you're never drafting this guy to be an all-star, but if you want him to be a starter, like he needs to get it within a year and a half, right? That's the gamble you're taking, which usually means it's really important as to what system he's plugged into.
No doubt. Well, I mean, it'd be funny to see him go. It'd be fun to see him go to a good team that was like, you know, mid to late in the first round, and you know, watch this guy get in the Spurs system and you know, and flourish in San Antonio or something like that. But speaking of older combo forwards, that would certainly be fun to envision around Miles Bridges or play next to Miles Bridges. Let's go to my prospect here. I'm bringing a guy that I know you and I both like a lot, Spencer, and he's still alive in the NCAA tournament too. This is a guy we've been talking about this podcast for about a year now. I remember us bringing him up during his redshirt freshman year at Virginia, and that's DeAndre Hunter. This guy to me is like, this is the modern floor spacing forward. He's a 3.5, right? Sort of like Miles Bridges, 6'8", 7'2 wingspan, 230 pounds. And like, I'm telling you, Spencer, you may have even seen him when you were at the games in Charlotte with the ACC tournament. That dude is solid. Like this is not a guy that like needs to put on weight. Like this is a well-built dude.
You can't believe how big he is. He looks big on TV, but – and Virginia's not a huge team, but especially in their guards. But when you see him on the floor, Brian, your point is just perfect.
Crazy.
The dude is ready for the NBA physically. There's absolutely no question about that. And I contend that he can play power forward most of his minutes.
I think so. I think that actually might be where he's best suited. But I like the thought of he and Miles next to one another. You know what I mean? Like they both those guys, in theory, can be primary defenders on a three or a four. And they should also be able to guard four positions too. You know what I mean? We've seen that with Hunter this year. Like, I know Carson Edwards lit him up in the Elite Eight game the other night, but he was just hitting some insane shots. And on some possessions, Hunter did a great job staying in front of him. He just got whistled for a foul on one of them. But like this year, DeAndre Hunter has stayed with Kobe White. He stayed with Nickeil Alexander-Walker. Ty's battle. Like he's guarded Zion Williamson. Like he has guarded fast players, including some of the better guard prospects in this class. And he's done a bang up job. An absolutely bang up job. He did a great, I mean, like they won that game in Chapel Hill in part because he took Kobe White off the court and he did a great job against NAW when they played Virginia Tech as well. But like Spencer, before the semifinal game against Florida State in the ACC tournament, I was down, you know, it's about an hour or so before tip time. I'm walking around by the court and the UVA is just going through shoot around and post up drills. And I just happen to take a photo of DeAndre Hunter on my phone as he's like calling for the ball. And it's just I took the photo and like, it's like as his right arm is raised and he's just flexing and you're like, oh, whoa, yeah, dude. Yeah, like you were like, I just didn't think of you as this kind of like looking like that. Again, I've seen Hunter play a lot. I've seen him up close a couple times in Durham at Duke games, but this was it was eye opening. The guy's ready to play. Spencer, you said this about him on a pod we did like a year ago. You said it looks like he's built in a government lab, and like the dude does. Like he just looks like
he looked like that last year, and he's discernibly bigger this year.
He reminds me of He reminds me a lot of Ananobi. That's sort of what I see with him, but. Couple things. He's smooth laterally. 7'2" wingspan, and he's smooth. Only 2.6 fouls per 40 minutes this year. Like, I get that people knock him for low blocks and steals numbers. Just 2.3% block rate, 1.2% steal rate. I'm not worried about that at all. Like, I just think he's so smooth defensively.
It's not a blocks and steals system.
And he gets them too. Like there's plenty. Like I got clips on my computer. I could pull up plenty of like DeAndre Hunter flying in from the weak side to pin a guy at the backboard. Like the guy's he can do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this guy is efficient scoring from all three levels. 63% at the rim in the half court. 62% on catch and shoot attempts. 62% effective shooting on catch and shoots. That was top 10 in the ACC this year. Just an outstanding. Face-up game. I know there's plenty of concern with his ability to create his own shot. I get that. Yeah. Ultimately, I don't think that's going to be a big deal for him because I don't think that's going to be his role. Like, I think this guy's assignment in the NBA is closeout beater. Like, hit 40% of your threes, beat a closeout, and I think he can do it. Like, his first step is a little slow. I'm not really – and I know his shot release isn't super quick, but, like, I'm not worried. I think it's going to be just fine. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be playing off advantage and playing on the weak side and just being a kick-ass second side offensive player. And like, again, not a lot of dunks this season, just 19 at Virginia. You'd think for such a freak athlete, he'd have more, but like he's good at the rim, man. And I get there's some concern too with his knee bend in terms of like, can he ever like hit his peak explosive? He plays a little upright offensively. Like, can he ever reach peak explosiveness? Maybe he can't. I generally don't think he has to. And I just think he's a high floor player. Maybe not a superstar, but like I thought with Bridges last year, like this is a guy you put in a starting lineup. He makes you better defensively, and he helps that. He only helps your offense. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I don't know if Hunter's going to fall to 11 or 12 where the Hornets are. He might be one or two picks before that. But if you could get him at 11 or 12, I mean, he's a steal there, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, I agree. I love DeAndre Hunter as a prospect. Always have, you know, since really he first burst on the map late a few seasons ago. And I agree with you, Brian. I think it is a positive that he's not going to be a high usage guy in the NBA, and that's great. I do wonder if that actually shoves him down. You know, some teams are going to think that's a big deal. Other teams are not at all. And so, how far can that, in theory, shove him down into the lottery? I would say my biggest concern with DeAndre is just, and you alluded to it a little bit there, he's a little bit of a stiff athlete.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, for how he's built and what you think he'd be able to do athletically, it's not that he never does it. He's had some explosive posterizing dunks at Virginia, but he doesn't do it very often. And that stiffness as an athlete bleeds over into a little bit of passiveness offensively. And that's been the most disappointing thing for me here late in the season for DeAndre. If he can't catch the ball on that pinch post, you know, elbow, short corner area, face up, and either just jab and knock down that jumper or just get straight to the rim, he's a little bit or catch and shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit uncertain of what to do. And I guarantee you the criticism on him through this process will be, yeah, but is this a guy that can take, you know, get a switch and punish that?
Yeah.
No around the basket in the NBA. And I actually don't think that's him yet. Can he become that? Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say he can't, but I do see the things about DeAndre that are concerning. But here's the flip to that. If Virginia wins the national championship, it means DeAndre Hunter, if I had to guess, is going to play pretty good here in these next two games. Mm-hmm. He's got, of anyone on this board, he obviously has, in the lottery, he obviously has the most to gain from here until into the college basketball season. I mean, it's all still right there in his hands. If he has a huge game on Saturday and a huge game Monday night, I could see this guy climbing. I could see him jumping Cam Reddish. Seriously, I could. Because I think he could be a better player.
But I think Reddish is in for a rude awakening come draft night, by the way, too. I'm a little worried because he might be available when the Hornets are picking is what I'm trying to say right now.
Right,
because
right.
It is not going great for Cam this year.
But in like Brian, our point is that it's nice that he can be a low usage, you know, stay in the corner and knock down 40% of three, you know, 38% of threes, whatever, and then every now and then beat out a closeout, you know. But if you're drafting him in the top 10, I don't think you're drafting him to be that guy. You know what I mean? So like trying to delineate what he is and what he projects as solidly from what he can be and what he should be, I think is going to be actually a fascinating case study for a lot of these teams, because there's not many guys like DeAndre where you're like, oh, you're just like almost foaming at the mouth because you can see all the potential, but you're just not satisfied. That's certainly been my feeling here this season with DeAndre. He's had a great season, don't get me wrong, but
yeah.
He has more to give, and I'll be interested to see how that really affects him in the draft or doesn't affect him at all.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting too. It's like a lot of that like face up mid post stuff that he does, that's where he generates a ton of his offense from. Like, unless he becomes a star in the NBA, you can throw a lot of that stuff. I mean, there's some skills that you can copy and paste from that and say like, hey, well, this is some stuff he could do to beat a switch or whatever. But it's like, you know, DeAndre Hunter facing up from 19 feet, if he's your fourth option, like that stuff's just not going to fly. Like role players, you know what I mean? Like third and fourth options don't do that stuff in the NBA. So that is a little bit interesting. It's like the thing he does best offensively might be a complete non-factor in the NBA. I'll say this too. Like, he's a little stiff. Someone get this guy to go do yoga, man. Come on. Let's get this guy to do some yoga. And you're right. I agree. Like, I think he and Jared Culver from Texas Tech, like those are the two guys that in the Final Four, they're the two best draft prospects and they got the most to gain. You know, if Chuma Okeke hadn't gone down for Auburn, he's another one of these guys you could have said, like, man, the big Final Four, like this guy climbs up into an even higher portion of the lottery. And it sucks that we were denied Okeke Hunter, you know, 3D matchup in the Final Four. That would have been really cool. But yeah, I'm with you on Hunter. I like him. I think he's going to be solid. I like that he's two-way player. And I like the shooting. Low turnover player, good shooter from all three levels, and he knows how to play defense. Like, I think the Hornets would be lucky to have this guy follow him, and I think he and Miles would pair really nicely together, too.
Oh, I mean, you're absolutely right there. I mean, the pairing between him and Miles Bridges is as good as it gets for any small four, power four prospect in this draft. I don't think there's any question about that.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, we wanted to thank you all for joining us for another episode. The season is almost over. with about a week and a half to play. As much as we
don't love, don't sound so dejected there, Richie.
Yeah,
it's not over yet.
Not mathematically. We still got five or six games left. By the time you're listening to this, probably five games left. And as much as we want to do some postseason playoff podcasts, I don't think we've done that in the history of BuzzBeat. I don't believe so. So that would be pretty cool. Once when the Hornets actually make the playoffs, to actually do some game recaps in the playoffs. But it's not looking that way this season. So some of the upcoming episodes are probably going to be reviewing and grading the 2018-19 season, handing out some report card grades to some of the positional players. And then we'll kind of pick back up our draft coverage. I always feel like the draft is like immediately after the season is over. We have this big gap because our season ends a little bit quicker than most teams. So
it's 10 weeks from now.
Our playoff season.
Yeah, we need to slow it down. We'll slow it down in that department, but definitely get you guys all the draft coverage that you guys tune in for. So we'll see you guys.
Richie, just imagine the stratosphere that this podcast is going to exist in the next time we're able to cover a Hornets playoff game. We'll be on ESPN Radio by then.
Yeah. Right. And that delays me from talking about draft prospects as well. So it's a double win for me. So we'll see you guys next time, and I hope you guys have a good one. See ya.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.